All right. I know you might have one of the two parties here for the song, Ella Fitzgerald, the great vocalist, the great singer, just a great person too. The other is Oscar Peterson on piano. And together, they presented us with Airmail Special. It was a very, very popular song. But I like the Ella Fitzgerald and Oscar Peterson version. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're picking up from where we left off. It's Free Your Mind Friday. What does that mean? It means that you are free to express your opinions or observations on any subject, providing you have a point to make. We don't want you just yammering. We want you to make a point, because people are listening and they may want to take you on the points that you raise. So that's what Free Your Mind Friday is all about. You take the program where you want it to go, and one hopes that you have a point to make. Okay, at 888-874-4888. That's the number to make your point. 888-874-4888. And please be aware that there are a lot of people other than you wanting to get on the air. So be as concise as you possibly can. Jay from New York, you're starting us off today.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. Listen, I would just like to say that we finally may have things in play to get rid of Donald Trump. Finally. Because
what?
It seems
what makes you
like
say that,
the rest of these two individuals in regards to the whole Ukraine situation and Giuliani. Because what I foresee happening is the Ukrainians are going to start talking. Donald Trump is going to turn his back on Giuliani. And Giuliani is going to spill the beans because of the blatant disregard that Trump is going to show him. And by doing that, Giuliani is going to be upset and start talking and let out all of the dirt because of Trump's disrespect. That's what I envision. That's how I'm seeing this thing moving forward at this time. I think Giuliani is going to absolutely lose his mind when, Trump does what he did to Cohen and what he's done to others to protect themselves. Giuliani's going to get the wake-up call. And then I also think that those two individuals that they arrested may have some information in regards to all of the things that went on with Ukraine, the election in 2016. I mean, it's about to get real interesting, I think. Now, I may be wrong.
Interesting? No, it's your opinion. It's interesting, but I don't know
because
that's going to be the thing that really turns this problem.
Yeah, but what happens now with the information that Giuliani has, he's going to put things out there that I think members of the Republican Party in the Senate are going to have to really take notice of. I think that it's just going to be too much pressure in regards to, you know, things that have been done. And believe me, I believe that there's more dastardly things in the closet that's going to be revealed once Giuliani start running his mouth. Because he's probably been the point man on most of them. And it also depends on who's going to put pressure on whomever. I mean, how much pressure are they going to put on Giuliani? Now, mind you, in this indictment with the two individuals, they said that there was two other people involved. The question becomes, who are those two other people involved in the conspiracy? Or what was going on? Now, could it be that one of those people are either Trump's children or Trump himself? So, I mean, this is really going to be quite interesting depending on how it plays out. And it all boils down to one thing. How much pressure are they going to put on Giuliani? And how much disrespect does he feel coming from Trump when Trump tries to, you know, pull himself away from Giuliani and the things that Giuliani's done? Giuliani has a superior ego.
If that is the case, if that is the point you're making, I have one question for you. Why did it take so long? And in fact, they haven't asked a question yet. What exactly was Giuliani's role in this administration?
But those are questions that have to be answered over a period of time. Because it seems to me they're trying to build a case.
You have a guy who mysteriously appears. No matter when he appears, the questions should have appeared as well. Basically put in the administration? Did he have top secret clearance of any kind? What exactly was he doing? He was supposedly an advisor to Trump. But does that mean he gets access to all these high level papers and whatnot? That question should have been asked a long time ago.
No, it shouldn't have been asked a long time ago because of the opposite of the way it's being run and the narrative has been. He's Trump's lawyer. He's no
participant. Yeah, but he's just Trump's lawyer. He's a private lawyer. He is not an executive of this government.
This is what I'm trying to say that's going to play into all of this, because how could you be not a member of the administration and be involved in the things that you're involved in and have access to the things that you're involved in? That's against the law. And this
is how the Democrats never raised the question, neither about Giuliani, nor about several individuals, including Trump's children.
But who's supposed to ask the question? That's what you're not saying. Who's supposed to ask that question?
The Democrats. The Democrats are supposed to ask the question.
Okay, so let's stop right there. It takes a period of time based on the relationship, because I don't care what nobody say. They're all comrades and friends. They all looking out for one another. They're not looking out for the American public. They're looking out for one another more than they are for the American public. So with the backlash that they're getting from the American public and the position that the American public is starting to take, you now have to start asking these questions. And it seems like they're not
asking the questions. It's just not now. Giuliani popped up a long time ago.
Yeah, but they didn't ask the questions. They gave him a pass.
You see a guy physically there, and he's doing all kinds of things that, as a member of Congress, you don't understand that he has business doing these kinds of things, representing the president in an official manner, and you're not asking questions?
Yeah, but Patrice, what I'm saying is, what I'm saying is they're all friends. They all in cahoots with one another.
I mean, don't even introduce that. The friends thing doesn't matter. The fact is, that was one of the first indications that the Democrats just fouled up. They refused to ask the questions.
And why wouldn't you ask the question? Because you want to protect your friends. You want to protect your allies. You want to protect your
It's not that deep. It really isn't that deep. All it is
is that deep, but
ask the question. I'm saying from the point of view of those who should have been asking the questions, you've seen people moving in and out of this administration that you, as members of Congress, you have no idea why they're there. You're seeing them popping up all over the place, acting as if they have authority to represent not just the president, but to represent the government of the United States. You're not asking questions.
Well, all
we, the people, we asked questions. We saw the president appoint his daughter to positions for which she absolutely is unqualified.
Not qualified.
Nobody asked a question. And because nobody asked a question, she continued to represent that she was like a personal representative, not only of the president, but of the country. This woman showed up at all these international meetings where she had no business showing up. And, you know, just inserted herself in discussions that she was not really permitted to participate in.
So whose job was it to put a stop to that? Was it the president's job to put a stop to that?
He did what he wanted to do. He put his daughters, he put his sons and other unqualified people to do things.
But whose job is it to stop it? Whose job is it to put a stop to it?
I'm answering you. Congress.
So Congress is not doing their job then?
That's my point.
But I never thought they were doing their job anyway.
Trump gave indication that he was not to be monitored and he had no one to answer to. That was his point. In your face, this is what I can do. I can grab Joe Schmo off the street and hand him the briefcase with all the codes and say, okay, from tomorrow you are handling nuclear issues for the United States. And he got away with things like that for quite some time. Nobody.
Well, the chickens are coming home to roost. I believe the chickens are coming home to roost.
You know, we say things like that, but we really don't mean it. If we meant it, we would have put a stop to it.
All right, I hear you.
When you talk about chickens, really, you're talking about us. We are too chicken to take on this president.
That's true.
Too chicken to press the point with members of Congress. What do you mean?
You have
people in and out. They're doing what they want. The military jets and so forth are like your personal taxi. And you think that this is something that the American people should tolerate? Get out of here.
Well, Eutrice, I'll leave you with this. Imagine if, like you always say, if we acted like the people in Puerto Rico did that gathered rid of their governor. Imagine if we stood up and acted like that, the position that we would now be in. It would be a beautiful thing.
We should stop imagining it. We should stop using this kind of ethereal language. It is not impossible to do. We just won't do it.
Agreed.
We put the responsibility on somebody else, and we're quick to say, oh, they failed. Well, you didn't even try. You know, we are a very, very peculiar people. You want things done, but you have no intention of being a part of the process of getting change made. Thanks a lot, Jay, for starting us off today. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's up by you?
Well, we've survived this little round of power cutoffs, and I believe that the key to America's clean energy future is the decentralization of the generation and distribution of electricity away from fossil fuels like coal, oil, methane, and dangerous nuclear power towards solar power, wind power, geothermal, and a variety of others, including battery storage technology, which we have now. This is all off-the-shelf technology, including utility-scale battery storage technology. And here in California, the utilities have told us that power blackouts will become the norm. And at the same time, the electric grid, which is what the utility uses, 40% of the power are generated by fossil fuels like methane, and they create vast amounts of carbon dioxide, as well as other greenhouse gases that are responsible for the heating up of our atmosphere and cause climate destabilization and create more severe weather, severe weather like droughts, which cause out-of-control wildfires that are responsible for this the blackouts. And
Could you, Harvey, briefly discuss why power blackouts are not the solution, and that there were many different solutions presented and were ignored, were not acted on. And now in this situation where there is a direct emergency, power blackouts now are the answer. They say if you cut the power to certain areas, it would prevent the system from overworking itself to produce this power, and therefore you wouldn't have fires, you wouldn't have generators overheating, you wouldn't have a whole bunch of problems that you're having now. Is this a good solution?
This is the worst possible solution, because PG&E doesn't pay for people, like, for instance, all the stores that have food that are refrigerated, people who have medical problems and need electricity. This whole system runs on electricity, and what they're offering, the system of power lines and the utilities, you see, they're connected up in such a way as that if there's a windstorm somewhere up in Northern California, they have to cut out all the power along the way. And so many people who where it isn't windy and the possibility of the power lines falling and starting sparking and causing fires, they have to lose that too. So like hundreds of thousands of people go without power. And it's the worst possible thing. Plus, they don't get compensated for their losses. And at the same time, President Trump wants to do more drilling and fracking for oil and gas, which is causing, which will create more greenhouse gases when burned by the utilities. And also, fracking causes earthquakes. They lubricate the fault lines that causes earthquakes. So our president is, this is the worst possible thing that could happen. And the key to it is the decentralization of power production. They're called microgrids, where every little community produces their own electricity. And there's also a technology called blockchain technology that will enable the distribution of that energy. Like one person with a house with solar panels can sell their electricity directly to the house next door. And so this is the thing here, is that we are caught in climate destabilization. It's just going to get worse and worse. And the key to it all is microgrids and the decentralization of energy production away from the old model, the utility model, and towards a system that Every little area is responsible for its own power. So if there's a problem somewhere, say in the far north, all the other communities can still, of the counties, can still have their electricity and not be cut off by power lines that go all the way around California and distribute the energy. So once a power line is cut off, then everybody along the way gets cut off too. This is not going to work for us, and the burning of fossil fuels is just accelerating it. So what people are doing is they're buying generators, and the generators burn fossil fuels. They create even more greenhouse gases. So the key is... Yes?
No, I said exactly.
Yes. So the key is that we have to... the ones who have power are the ones who have solar panels on their house, and they have a battery inside the house. So the solar panels are generating electricity, is charging up the battery. They could use at night. And there is one company called Tesla that they sell the solar rooftop, the installation. They have battery system. They sell that too, and they sell you an electric car. So that works because you can charge up your car and run your house at night. And so that's the model that that all the companies should be going after. And that's the key to our renewable energy future, because the sun is the provider of all our electricity. Even fossil fuels have
long has this suggestion been on the table as something that should be explored, a workable idea, rather than wait till the grid system that they have now starts collapsing one by one?
Well, it's been on the table a long time, but unfortunately, people only react when there's a lot of death and destruction. That seems to be what wakes them up. And our politicians, they all are essentially work with the old system. They're comfortable with it, the utilities, like, they have billions of dollars to help finance the politicians, and so the old system has stayed in place. But now, with the insurance companies, they're all going to go bankrupt over this system. That doesn't work for them anymore. So things are changing here. And like I say, when people sit around in the dark, because we all rely on electricity so much for everything, our computers, our homes, our refrigeration, everything like that, now the people are starting to wake up. And I hear on local radio stations, everybody's talking about new ideas, new alternatives, including microgrids and decentralization of electricity. But this is what it takes. It takes trauma before people will change away from what they're used to try something new.
And they still think, this is the people now, they've been presented with a workable alternative, and cheaper, by the way. But they didn't insist that it be considered, seriously considered, to replace the system that they have now. So now here's what we have. We have, and I would say like 15 or 20 years, these ideas have been floating around. And now people are getting upset because the inevitable became the inevitable. And they're looking now for people to solve the problem that was within their purview to solve. They had the ability to insist that this be taken seriously. Here we have a crisis. And you had at least 15 years to consider good alternatives and cheaper alternatives. They did not do the job. And that's what we get. We can't always point the finger at government. This is my point. Largely, the problems that could have been solved by us were not, because people didn't want the responsibility. They didn't want to get involved. Well, you'll get involved now when your pacemaker starts acting up, and when your parents can't breathe right because they need to have that ventilator. Now it becomes an issue, and they want it solved now. No. We have to hold people responsible for their own problems, too. you could see, people have been talking about this for years, you could see what would happen if the grid just collapses. Well, now you're seeing it. And it can't be solved by next Tuesday. Thanks, Harvey, for your call. Jose from Rosedale, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor. Hope all is well with you.
Thank you, and I hope the same for you.
Thank you, thank you. You know, in my humble opinion, as I've often said, as an old-timer, I've lived on this planet long enough to experience so many things, seen so much, and I think I have learned something along the way. I think we are living in extremely dangerous times in this country. Not that we haven't been through extremely dangerous time, because it couldn't be more extreme than slavery. But we are living under a regime that I think it's very, very dangerous. This regime has been, it's not that the American people had no idea of what they were in for. But this man and his regime have served the interests of the powerful, right? They saw no threats coming from him because their interest was well provided for. But what was so sad and unfortunate is that majority of the American people, and I'm talking mostly white folks because they are the majority in this country, they are reserved for some reason in their whiteness, because they believe that what this man what he's spewing out, it won't affect them. It will only affect the minorities, the black and Latinos and the immigrants, that everybody usually, when all else fail, they usually find the immigrants and the minority to vent their anger upon. And as I said, the white folks, most white folks, they sit back and they revel in their whiteness because they say this is not going, it's not happening to them. And their interests are being taken care of. And once you have these folks who believe in this system, they have been fed this system from for centuries, that there is no alternative to capitalism, white supremacy, imperialism, and so forth. And they believe that they should be the ones to control and dominate the interests of others throughout the world, that they are number one, militarily and otherwise. And when you have a people believing in these things, it is easy for someone to come along of their ilk and their kind to bamboozle them and to take them down to similar to what Jim Jones did to those folks in the jungle of Guyana.
Now,
it's just that.
I have to challenge you on these things. I have to challenge you on several of your premises.
Yes.
You speak as if this is true of all white people.
I'm not picking up your, can you repeat, please?
I said you speak as if this attitude applies to all white people and that you have scientific proof that that is true.
My professor, I could not stand here and tell you that that is the case with all white people. Maybe just my manner of speech. But you know I could mean all white people.
See, this is but where it's different
too many.
Now. We can't make statements, bold statements, and just attribute it to your manner of speech. It's like saying all black people are ignorant. No, you can't make these statements as if they were fact. And I'm asking you for the facts.
Well, can we move on if I say to you that If an apology is needed, then I will gladly apologize. I didn't mean all white people, but it's the same as in Nazi Germany. Germany agreed with Hitler
happens.
And in the extermination of the Jewish people. I don't believe that.
This is what happens when people make fast and loose statements. and insist that they be regarded as fact. Now, when I ask you to prove or to give us some relevant information that would even come close to authenticating what you're saying, you can't produce it. You're speaking about something that is indicting a people. You're indicting a people. And yet you can't produce a single fact to buttress your opinion. I can't let you get away with that. See?
You went quiet. People against slavery.
What year are we in right now? 2019. We are quite a distance away from slavery, wouldn't you say?
Baseline?
We are quite a distance away from slavery, as
That's
we understand
what you think.
It. I'm sorry?
That's what you think.
All right, well then we have an unbreachable situation here. I'm saying to you, you're not making sense when you stand up and use the airwaves. That is where I come in. Because part of my job is to make sure there's no abuse of the airwaves. You are entitled to express a view. Okay. But I caught you up on, well, where are your facts?
What more do you want me to say?
You haven't been able to produce one. And you now just wipe it over by saying, well, that is how I feel. That's not enough.
What more do you want me to say? I ask you, if all white people were against slavery, why did it last so long? And if all Germans was against what Hitler did to the Jewish people, why did it last so long? Why did it destroy so many millions of people?
Let's deal with this now. You're moving on to another question that had no relevance to your original question. And that's what people do when they get caught and they try to shift. And I'm sorry?
Simple issue. I've made my point and I've said to you, I apologize if it offended you and we can move on. But you
It is not whether you are offending me. It is whether you are offending anybody.
You are filibustering the time. How much time are we spending on that issue?
May I at least try to communicate to you? And this is part of the responsibility that we bear as people who come to the forum to present ideas. The first thing that you did was to assume you would just be permitted to say things that have no basis in fact. And secondly, that I have no reason to challenge you or question you about the premises upon which your opinion is based. And you're wrong.
I didn't say you can't challenge me, my professor, but I'm simply saying I've given you my opinion, and I've made a few cases to you, but you choose to stay on this forever, and you're using the time to just filibuster.
Well, why don't you understand it in a different way? That as many times as I have brought this to your attention, you have insisted on ignoring it.
But my professor has said to you,
and at the same time, you are not entitled to use people's support for the station and people's interest in what is being discussed here. You are not entitled to abuse that. And I have to check you.
So I'm asking you again for the last time, why is it that slavery lasted so long in this country if all white folks were against it? Why did Nazism last in Germany so long? So many millions of people died. If all the, if some of the German people was not for it, why?
Well, let me put it bluntly from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That is not an intelligent question.
In your opinion?
You know, why did this occur if people, for so long, if people had other ideas? Why? We could spend the next 20 years discussing why. And it didn't start out being your issue.
This is the way Giuliani and his, I mean, this president and his regime has started out. The point I'm trying to make is this is where we are heading because we have a regime that has no respect for human values, certain human values. And this is, that's why I say we are heading in dangerous waters because this man is not getting out of town without a battle. Are we going to see some serious things happen in this country? That's the point I'm trying to make. Why you tend to want to hold on to these journalistic principles you're talking about? And they don't operate based upon your ideas and your thesis and your premise and so forth. They don't operate like that. They don't even care what you think.
First of all, bring the volume level down.
Thank you. It's just the way I am, my professor. I don't mean to be offensive or anything. But it's just the way I am.
I don't like to hear that nonsense. It is just the way I am.
What so nonsense?
What? The world has to always accommodate you just the way you are. You have no obligation to fix your problem. You have no obligation, no responsibility to alter the way you operate. That's just the way I am. These are the things I'm trying to communicate to you. If you are in the process of communicating with people, you have to have a total vision of what communication is all about. You can't just stomp on a person's foot because you're angry and they react. And you say, well, that's just the way I am. That isn't even a poor excuse. It's no excuse. You're a grown man with the ability to reason and with the ability to formulate your ideas in such a way as you don't have to offend anybody to communicate with anybody. You have to offend people and tell them, you know, how stupid they are and how smart you are. Not at all. If you're interested in communication, you have to understand what that entails. You come in for a fight. I'm not a fighter, but I will fight if I have to, and very, very capably. I'm very good at it. We want to communicate. There's no need to shout. My hearing is pretty good. There's no need to insult my intelligence. You have a point of view. I have a point of view. And as strongly as you believe in your point of view is as strongly as I will put you to the test to see that what you're expressing is not really a point of view. It is corrupted history. You don't deserve to be the purveyor of corrupted information. You can make your points very strongly, but don't invent a reality that does not exist. And don't presume that I too will invent a reality that does not exist. No, I will challenge you. As I challenged you with, you made sweeping statements as if they were fact. And yet you could not conjure up one reference to defend your point because it's not factual. It's what you're thinking. And I'm here to challenge you every time you do it. That's why this program exists. Express your opinion, but expect challenges, because every time you do that, I will check you. And I'm not fearful. Let's move on. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Therese, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you for that interesting session on communication, what it means, what it doesn't mean, how to do it, how not to do it kind of deal. I'm going to listen to that again on the archive.
It's very important. I could have the most virulent challenger on my hands, but he would never be able to say that I prevented him from making his point. Whatever it is, I will disassemble his point right in front of him. Mm-hmm. If he chooses to accept it, fine. He chooses not to accept it, it's okay. But this is our common ground right here. This is sacred ground. We don't promote lies. We don't promote things that are just not true, as if they were fact. Mm-hmm. We don't. This is a shared space, and you have to respect, you know, what goes with that. It's a shared space. People have different points of view, and I like that. But different points of view that are tantamount to misinformation and disinformation and sometimes plain outright lies, I can't allow it. I have to speak up against it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that. Now, I was calling because I had two things. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have two things I wanted to, like, share. One was that on October 4th and 5th in Louisville, Kentucky, at Simmons College, there was an inaugural conference by this organization called ADOS, American Descendants of Slavery. I was not able to attend, but I did watch it via live stream, and I found it to be worthwhile to listen and learn. A couple of quote-unquote big names came through there, like Dr. Cornel West and Marianne Williamson, the presidential candidate. And there were panel discussions and very enlightening, very enlightening presentations. For example, one by this young woman, her last name is Harris, about ADOS and housing, wealth extraction and gentrification, what it is, how it works, what you can do about it. I only watched the Saturday portion. I don't know if the Friday portion. I don't know if the Saturday portion was live streamed or not. But for anyone who may be interested, they do have a website. They have what they call a Black Agenda. The website is ADOS101.com. Some of the leaders or founders of this organization, one is a woman by the name of Yvette Carnell, and the other one is a black man by the name of Antonio Moore. Yvette Carnell used to work on the Hill for a couple of Democratic congresspeople. She's a Howard grad. Antonio Moore is an attorney. And the both of them, they work pretty closely with Dr. Sandy Darity, who is a economist at Duke University. And in addition, they also work with Dr. Kevin Cosby, who is the president of Simmons College. Simmons College is a historically black college, I found. But I wanted to just share that information is out there and available, and for folks who want to get accurate information about this group, because I've heard them slammed in ways and misrepresented by other people, too. I have been watching their YouTube sessions in terms of the political education that they offer and things like that, and I find that other people are making comments that don't reflect the truth about what these folks are trying to do. And let me also throw this in. I don't know if you're aware or not, but there's this huge Supreme Court case coming up that involves Byron Allen and
yes.
Comcast. Byron Allen is this media well, I don't know how to describe him. He's a former comedian, but he owns a lot of TV stations, and he's been in a fight to try to get his stations on Comcast, and Comcast is refusing, and Byron Allen took them to court a couple times and won the case based on this Civil Rights Act of 1866. Now, Comcast appealed Byron Allen's two wins and is going. They're going to the Supreme Court because Comcast wants the Civil Rights Act of 1866 reinterpreted another way. It's Section 18. No, I forget what section of that Civil Rights Act. But part of that act is that black folks, you know, are supposed to have, you know, access to business or what have you. But Comcast, my understanding, again, Comcast is at saying that you have to prove 100% that we didn't work with you because you were black. I mean, what I mean is you have to prove that race is the only reason, the 100% reason that we did not work with you. You know, and that's how they want this law to be interpreted versus, you know, if you can prove 80% that it was race or 90% that it was race, they don't want that to count. They want you to prove it 100% that race was the reason we're not working with you. And that's a reinterpretation of that 1866 Civil Rights Act. And I didn't know about this fight until I started checking out ADOS. They were the first ones who brought that up to me. I've since shared that information with others. But that's one thing. That's one thing I wanted to share. The second thing I wanted to talk about was the system of racism, white supremacy, and I do consider myself a victim of racism. And I often read the books written by Neely Fuller Jr., and there's this thing called four basic show-offisms among victims of racism, non-white people, that some of us do, and that I'm checking in myself. I'll be real quick now. These four show-offisms are, the first one is showing off to each other the things that white people have allowed them to obtain. In other words, look what I got. The second show-off is showing off to each other the information that white people have allowed them to obtain. The third one is showing off to each other their ability to belittle each other. And the fourth one is showing off to each other their ability to make sexual impressions on each other. This is straight from Neely Fuller's book, page 119, the revised edition. But he also adds that the reason we do this, some of us, not everybody, they do this as a means of trying to make the overall effects of racism, white supremacy, on their quote-unquote personal affairs seem unimportant and or non-existent. For me, I was guilty of, in the past, I found times when, showing off to each other the information that white people have allowed me to obtain, showing off the information that I learned in school or college, blah, blah, blah. I don't do that anymore, thank God, hopefully not as much. But I felt the need to, like, share that with you. Again, that's from the United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept, revised and expanded edition by Neely Fuller Jr. I think that's all I wanted to share. I appreciate your time.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes,
thanks,
ma'am.
So much for calling in and contributing. Okay, let's see. Mitch, you're on the air from New York.
Oh, that was a terrific call. I really appreciated her. Great call. I'm calling in to say that the way our lawmakers are pushing the impeachment for Donald Trump and putting out, you know, how inadequate a person he is, which is true, but wouldn't it be nice if they would throw down the gauntlet and make these same issues about health care in our society. Like, everybody should be entitled to health care free without going bankrupt. I was in a nursing home this weekend, and the lady, she was in a nursing home, and it came out that her insurance wasn't covering the full amount. And they told her that if she stayed in the nursing home any longer, it would cost her $2,000 a day. And she didn't have any income. She had a little home. So they said, well, you're going to have to sell your home. You're going to have to go bankrupt. And I find this is prevalent. You know, it's across the spectrum. I know people that can't afford to go to doctors because they're afraid of what it's going to cost them. Student loans. Our students are coming out of school owing thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in debt. Now, we're making a big issue about the kids in the on the border and what it's doing to them, which is a fact. But our children, they're coming out of school, and they're in debt pendage for 20 years, paying back thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of student loans. This shouldn't be. This is terrible. Not only that, they're paying it back to the government. In the same nursing home I was in, they had Filipino nurses in there and doctors. They came out of school, they owed nothing. But the same nurse that they were working next to owed $70,000 in debt, student loans. And she had to work, you know, behind off in order to pay back her student loans, pay her rent, and pay everything. See, this shouldn't be. And our lawmakers, all you can hear now, we're going to end up, yes, making issues about this guy. He's not going anywhere. But these issues that are facing our children, our country, are still there, and they're real, and they're affecting us. So why don't we make fusses about things that are the gentrification in our neighborhoods? I paid $900 a month rent. Next door, the lady moved in. She's paying $3,200 a month for the same apartment. These are issues that are facing us as a people, and nobody is talking about them real.
Well, where do they come from? You have a sympathetic voice in the White House and at the state and city levels, because real estate is a big factor in how these people became wealthy. So they're tied into an industry, and they have a sympathy for the industry, and at the expense of the people who, everybody needs a place to stay. Everybody needs a place to live. It is amazing how they can't see that, or they won't see that, because it's not in their interest. So they block it out.
So what about student loans? And these kids coming out of school owing all of this money. You know, like my granddaughter, she's coming out of school. Luckily, we can help her out in some ways. But she owes $70,000. And she's only 23 years old. You know, and that's across the board. You know,
yes,
I know people
that are in their 50s. Imagine if we put our dissatisfaction together and make it a people's campaign. These are the things we want. We confront everybody running for president now. And we confront everybody in Congress now. These are not extraordinary demands. We're talking about humanitarian existence here. Your point is very well taken. And it is especially brutal on the elderly and on the younger people who are just starting out in life. I don't see how anybody could think that this is okay.
But apparently our lawmakers do. I mean, look at the fuss they're making over Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not going anywhere. He's not. He's not going anywhere. And these same people that are making this fuss about Donald Trump are saying nothing about issues that affect us down on the ground. Nothing. All of these lawmakers probably are taking monies from the healthcare industry, from the banking and all of this stuff. These are issues that they don't want to touch. But if we get together and say organize, and we get young people in there with young ideas, get rid of these people that has been there for 10 and 15 years, just vote them out of office.
Well, I just heard Ella is signaling that we'll run out of time today, as we have. So thank you so much for contributing. Thank you for listening. And have yourselves a great weekend, and we'll see each other Monday. Thank you. Bye-bye. Brooding,